As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and, I've waited a long time to say this, all season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I'm joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Doug, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of what title I could add in the times of spring training. And, you know, I've shoveled. I've definitely done that. So now I'm just getting ready. I guess I'm like a professional packer now. So I'm just packing up stuff to get on the road. So yeah. Let's do it. UPS, call me up.
I can relate. All right. Hey, Doug, why don't you perform an important public service? Tell everybody where you will be on opening day and on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah. Well, opening day is White Sox Astros in Houston. So we do the Thursday game and the Saturday game. And then staying in Texas, we got the Rangers. I believe it's Phillies Rangers. So let's do it. You know, I don't know if Jacob DeGrom will be, you know, on the hill or what's happening, but starting off with Dusty Baker defending his title. Very, very appropriate. Many years playing with him and happy for him.
Yeah, I just had a great chat with Dusty and a big column on all the people he's heard from since he won the World Series. Obama called. Of course he did, right? and thousands of other people. Anyway, Phillies, Rangers, to me, are two of the most interesting teams in baseball this year. So next week, you should tell us what you thought. But Doug, I love opening day. I love it when baseball gets going again. And you know who else loves all of that just as much as we do? It's our special guest this week. It's our friend Harold Reynolds of MLB Network. Harold, I cannot believe this is your first visit to Starkville. So welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, it's taken a while. Thank you, man. This is an honor. It's great stuff.
The honor is ours. Glanville will get that key to the city in the mail to you by the end of the show. Right, Doug?
Well, first I'm going to try to sell him a timeshare in Starkville. so if you get turn some profit out of it, but then the key will come after that. Yep.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Plenty of timeshare openings as we speak. all right. I let Glanville tell everybody what he'll be up to opening day. So, Harold, you got some exciting stuff coming up yourself. Good day, Harold. We've got yet another new Harold Reynolds extravaganza coming. Tell us what you're starting up this week.
Well, I am excited about the season. It's going to be awesome. MLB tonight, I'm moving from the late night, 10 o'clock with Greg Amsinger and Dan Plesac, to the 6 p.m., 6 to 7 most nights, some nights 6 to 8. And we're revamping it. It's going to be Adnan Virk, myself, as the two main guys, and then we'll rotate some analysts in and out. But it's going to be a different look. We'll stand in different parts of the studio. We'll really not try to cover all 30 teams in one night. We'll cover them over a period of time. That way it's you get a little more concise meat instead of a whole little smorgasbord. Just on opening day, for example, Chris Young is going to join us late in the show. He's going to talk a little about Jordan Walker. And later on the next day, we have Bill Ripken. Bill has the Bill Blackboards, things he's seen, trends that he's seen. So I'm sure we'll dive into a lot of the new rules and things like that. But really want to talk and prepare people at that time for the games that are going to start at 7. So really excited about it. It's going to be a nice, pleasant change, and I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, this will be great. You and Adnan will be so great together. Maybe you'll even drag me onto that show sometime. You never know.
Yeah, you can count on it. Both you guys. I'm acquiring guests, so you're coming in. And the beauty of it, what I want to do with guests when they come in, man, you got time. Speak what you've been seeing, what you've been thinking. Instead, we're so often jumping in and out of highlights. We want to kind of set that 6 o'clock to 7 when we'll go into ballpark cams, give it a look, but really dive in. You saw something. We'll dive into, what do you think of Volpe? What do you think of Jordan Walker? What do you think of these young players? And then I'll end it with this, and we can dive into what you guys want to talk about. I get in the cage with Aaron Judge. And I got a chance to go hit with Aaron, go through his routine. That's going to air on opening day. And I'll tell you what, it was fun. It was fun.
Wow. You and Aaron Judge, very similar hitters.
I felt like Kevin Hart. I was like, he's so big. Kevin Hart's about 5'4". And I was looking at Aaron the whole time like this. Yeah. It's pretty impressive, though. He can swing that bat.
No kidding. All right. Look, our job today is to get people ready for this baseball season. I can't think of two guys I'd rather do that job with than you two. So, all right, why don't we start with this question? How momentous is this season? And I mean it. I think with these new rules, this feels to me like the biggest earthquake to hit baseball since, I don't know what, the year of the DH? Harold, what do you think?
I totally agree. I think also, coming off the WBC, I mean, to have Trout and Ohtani match up for the last out of the World Baseball Classic, seeing the fans' enthusiasm, getting a chance to get a taste of culture worldwide, and knowing that the fact that the whole country of Japan shut down to watch that game, baseball's on a high trajectory. And like you said, Jason, the rules to be able to come off of spring training, where you had apprehension going in and over enthusiastic excitement going out. Because games are 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and 30 minutes. And it's action packed. I mean, it's great. I'm curious you guys' thoughts, but that's how I see it.
Doug?
Well, I mean, Harold, I'm curious. Like, what do you think took so long? You know, like, it's sort of once you see it, you're like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. You know, what do you think was taking so long for this to kind of come together?
Well, as you well know, there's a lot of bureaucratic stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I think for a while, with the union and ownership and fighting the brand of the game, to baseball's hard for change. You know, I mean, think about guys started wearing white shoes and we went, white shoes? You know, I mean, it takes that long. Oh, they're wearing beards in Oakland. What's wrong with them? You know, so we are rooted in a lot of old tradition in our sport. And it's like turning the Titanic to get things to turn around. And the thought of a pitch clock and the thought of being able to regulate where guys might stand on the field just took forever to sit right with people. You had to see it. And it's still not going to sit right with a lot of folks. But I think with time, things change. And you know, I like the rules, but that's what took so long, if you ask me. It just was, we're entrenched in old tradition a lot in the sport.
Ian, I remember like writing about this 10 years ago, writing about the clock and talking to players who were terrified that the clock would start ticking and it would be like Villanova going to UConn, you know, and so there'd be 10 seconds left in the clock, but the crowd will be chanting 4, 3, 2, 1. Wait, I shouldn't give anybody any ideas, right?
I don't know,
but it was incredible. I was talking to Francisco Lindor the other day. Already, you know, he had 2 weeks playing in the WBC, came back to spring training, and he said it was weird to like to go back to the clock after that little time warp period in the WBC. Just how much different the games feel, how much crisper they feel, how much better the rhythm of the games are. I loved watching it. We'll get to this, but Harold, Britt Giroli has a really fun piece in The Athletic right now, and you're actually quoted in it. Everywhere I went this spring, it felt like if I asked about the pickoff rules and the bigger bases and how they were going to change base stealing, somebody would ask, hey, how many bases would Ricky Henderson steal?
Right.
So Britt actually found Ricky and asked him. Like, it's incredible she could even find him. But yeah. He said he'd steal another 50 or 60 bases a year. What? Harold, is he right?
Well, I mean, I never put anything past Ricky. Yeah, she asked me about that, and I started laughing at first. I'm like, I don't know about 50 or 60. It's going to add. I mean, he was already still at 120. I mean, what else you want? But I do think that people that have not stole a base at a high volume don't fully understand what the game is like with base stealers. And I know, Doug, you can relate to this. And obviously, Jason, you covered it when we were aggressive. It was a mindset. I think the biggest change in the rule is not the 4 inches of the base. It is the two throwovers.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get technical, if I have a left-handed pitcher, we would take what we call the one-way lead if I couldn't read him, right? You get way out there, and you're leaning back, and you're wanting him to throw. You're enticing him to throw over because I want to see what kind of move he has. So he would throw over, and you go, okay, I kind of got to read. Let me get out there again. He'd throw over. He hadn't given me his best move yet. I got to get a little further. But I was already, regardless of what he did, I was going back to the base. And then there'd be that time you shuffle back and they go, oh, he fooled him. No, I was going to go back anyway. Well, now with the two throwovers, I'm getting out there. I'm making you throw the ball to first twice. And then I'm getting way out there and saying, what are you going to do? I'm gone. And I don't know if people really fully understand that weapon yet. And when they grasp it, they will, but that was something that was taught back in the 80s and 90s of baseball. Doug, I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and the thing, Harold, that's interesting is sometimes it is, you mentioned earlier, it's like a mindset, but it's like the freedom to know that you can eliminate certain elements of doubt. That's what crushes you as a base stealer sometimes, right? Well, he might just do that. I mean, look at John Lester, right? They knew he couldn't throw over. But, you know, like, is he going to slide step? Are they going to pitch? You know, just that little bit of inkling, you still kind of lose that edge. But now you're counting. You're literally like, okay, is he going to take the chance and go over once you have that freedom to run? And I was a guy who liked to pop up slide. So I'm like thinking, okay, give me those 4 inches because you hit your foot on the front of that bag and you kind of come up. Now, of course, you got to get to the base now because of instant replay. But I'm curious, like, you know, based on what you've seen, you know, whether it's how you slide, do you anticipate, other than the strategy you just outlined, other things that base stealers might try to do?
Yeah, I go back to real quick to your point with the pitcher that you're thinking he may throw over. There was a guy named Teddy Higuera. You guys remember him with the Brewers?
Yeah, Brewers. Yeah.
He had the greatest no throw over move ever. I mean, he would look like he was throwing over every time and he'd throw the ball home. And I'm telling you, if I could have forced him to know that now Teddy's not throwing over and I had that thought, that would have been a big victory for me on the bases. Yeah. I think the whole point of what we're doing with the base running, what we're seeing, is to force the front offices to play baseball again. We've been so calculated. I never had heard the phrase all my years of playing and early in broadcasting, there's only 27 outs in the game. Never heard that. I never even thought about it. There's 27 outs. It was force action, make them make mistakes. And if you get thrown out, you got thrown out. But you got this guy a fastball at the plate to hit. That was the mindset. We're going to hit and run. We're going to go face to face. We're going to put pressure on the defense. Now it's like, I got 27 outs. Don't do that. And that's what our front offices have become. So I think all these rules are to force the front offices to say, there's other ways to play the game. We need entertainment. And so that's how I see the rules happening. What have I seen from base runners? Spring training is hard to judge because everybody's trying to make a team. Everybody's trying to show off. And they don't care about 27 outs. We'll know when the season starts what that front office is thinking. Am I going to worry about my 27 outs, or will I let guys run fancy free on the bases?
Well, a couple of things. The rate of base stealing that was attempted this spring, I wrote about this a week or so ago, was almost 2.5 attempts per game. The last time we saw stolen bases attempted at that rate in the big leagues, you know what it was? 1919. So that's a little different.
Wow. I'm
sure that will slow down. But remember, the minor league stolen base success rate last year was close to 80%. And if the big league success rate is close to 80%, guys will run.
Yeah.
Hey, the other thing that I saw this spring, dancing. You know, it's like dancing with the stars. I talked to a bunch of minor league players who could run a little bit, and they were telling me how, like, the thing to do was not just to take a big lead, but to dance, to unsettle the pitcher, to make him step off or make him throw over and start the disengagement clock going. And I saw some teams do that this spring, so it's really something to watch for, and it's fun. There's like a whole new game within the game.
Well, the beauty of what we're seeing and we're talking about is strategy is back in. You know, one of the reasons I got frustrated calling games, I was like, just leave me in the studio. Because as the analyst in a game broadcast, I used to be able to say, hey, this is a hit and run situation right here. You know, they may be running. Watch out. He might get moving. He might on this run. Oh, that ball's in the dirt. He should have advanced and went to second on that ball in the dirt. All those things have been eliminated from the conversation of a sport. Because we have a shift and we're going to hit 3-run homers. We don't have guys that wanted to hit the ball the other way. There was no bunt. There was no strategy. So all that was just thrown out the window. And I was like, may as well just have the play-by-play guy there. There's nothing for me to tell you that you might see. So now all these strategies have come back in the game. And I'm excited to see what happens now because you do have to think about situations. I've thought as much as, how quick do they have to get the sign to the third base coach to get it to the hitter when you got 20 seconds? You know, we were always taught not to tip the signs. If there was a foul ball, a third base coach put the sign on real quick while you looked at him and everybody else followed the ball. Yep. You know, so those little strategies are now coming back into the game. The pitch calm, they tried it this spring with the pitcher had to call the pitch to save some time, not the catcher. Transferring the sign to everybody else. So all these things have come into play with the new rules that were just kind of sitting dormant in our sport.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of uses of the pitch comp too. I'm kind of getting off the track here, but I was at a game where Alec Manoa was pitching to Alejandro Kirk. It was Kirk's first start of the spring because he was late. And so three ball count, they couldn't agree on the sign. And so Alec Manoa didn't know quite what to do, so he stepped off, but it was too late to do that, so they called ball four, and they announced in the press box, intentional walk. It was the least intentional walk I of all time. Right? But I talked to Alec afterwards, and he said, I'm going to wear the pitch comm unit in the future, because if we ever get into that situation again where we can't agree on a sign, I can just pump in a pitch and then go. Because that way, at least I can throw a pitch and not have this happen. And so there are a lot of uses to the technology within the confines of the rules.
You know, real quick, and yeah. I don't know where you're going to go. I don't want to get you too far off, but like Manny Machado was the first one that got called for a strike, right? And that was well-known, well-documented. Mm-hmm. I talked to Manny afterwards, and he said, you know, I got to the plate, and you always do your greeting your first at bat. I tapped the shin guards of the catcher. I tapped the umpire. How you guys been? It's been a good winter. The umpire goes, 4 seconds, Manny. He goes, huh? Two. He's like, what? Strike one. And he was like, oh, man, I just have to start my routine earlier. So guys are starting to figure out what they need to do as well.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about the clock. The average game this spring was 25 minutes shorter than last spring and a half hour shorter than during the season. And, you know, as you've been saying, there was still some crazy stuff that went on because of the clock. Howard, you know, I was at the game that ended on the clock off call.
Oh, you're at that
game. Because of course I was, right? My wife told me, you willed that to happen because you were there. But anyway, what do you think? How do you think the pitch clock will change the experience of watching baseball and playing baseball?
Well, I think it's going to be great. You know, like you were saying earlier about the Villanova basketball game, you know, will fans start counting down? I think it engages fans immediately. I mean, you can't even watch football like normal anymore. You're watching, will they get the snap off? I'm looking at the little circle. You force television to be different. They had to figure out where to put that clock so you could see countdown 5, 4, 3, and the quarterback stomping his head. And he's going, he's not going to get it off in time. There's an anxiety and there's an engagement with the fans. So I'm watching that clock during the spring, and I'm saying, he's got 2 seconds. He hadn't even started his delivery yet. They can't get an agreement. This is going to be a ball. You know, so I'm watching all these little things. I think it's important. I know people were like, how'd you cut a half hour out? It's all the wandering around, the overthinking. And I don't know if the numbers are right, Jason, but I think the stats are – the offense is probably up too. And spring training offense is up somewhat, but I think we're getting rid of that overthinking. Okay, what's he going to throw me here? 2-2, 80% of the time he does this. And guys are calculating things out instead of get in the box, react, play the game like it used to be played.
Yeah. Doug?
Well, and Doug, Howard, I mean, you smiling, man.
I mean, well, it made me think of the synthesizing of data, right? There's so much going on. And I remember last year talking to Dave Roberts about how Freddie Freeman was like tired of guys going to the plate and then coming back and being on their iPads, not even watching the game. Just like, it's just so much synthesizing of data, but it also got so risk averse, right? You started to, you're like, okay, if I'm going to increase my chance of scoring a run by 20%, 20 percentage points by stealing third here, that's great. But if I get caught, I'm going to decrease my chance of my team by 40 percentage points. So what ends up happening is you just see it as like a binary choice, and then you just don't run at all. Right. And, yeah. And you know, Harold, like everybody loves the low percentage play. That's what kind of makes it special, right? The rarity, the Tom Lawless home run in the World Series, like that is the stuff that makes you feel like anything's possible. And when you start to eliminate all these things, right, because of risk, then you get to these places. And I just think that, you know, all right, clock, you've taken out some of the thinking. And I guess one question I have regards to that clock is, what do you think about that max velocity component? Because guys, it's also recovery, right? It's synthesizing, but it's recovery. And they would step back and then do like a crow hop from center field to throw the pitch because they had all this time.
Right.
You know, have you have any insights on like what you think might happen there?
Oh, it's definitely going to decrease the velocity. Guys are just not physically going to be capable.
Can I mention something? In the minor leagues with the pitch clock, there was no significant decrease in velocity. Does that tell us anything or not?
I think that'll be interesting to see. I guess the numbers are probably the numbers, but I have a tendency to disagree. I just feel like we had so many guys that wandered around and just restored their breath and reached back for 99. I want to see when they're in that 15-second mode. It's just, I mean, it's real simple. If you lift weights or you run or anything like that, you run sprints, you're going to get tired. And so I think that will be a real interesting thing I want to watch. I was thinking a couple of things that when you're talking about running too, back to the philosophies of adverse or not risk on running or not. I remember the philosophy was always, I'm going to get that guy at the plate something to hit. And because I'm on, they're going to throw a fastball because they don't want me to steal. So that hitter's now getting fastballs to hit. I remember Alvin Davis or even Ken Phelps, you know, famous Ken Phelps got traded for Jay Buhner. I played with him when he first came over, played AAA, then we played in the big leagues together. And he would want me to steal second or be on first so he'd get a fastball. He knew he was going to get a heater to hit. You know, so little things like that. The other thing that's happened, you know, I don't want to sit here and just hammer front offices as much as I would like to sometimes, but the other thing I think is going to change is we got to the point, maybe this is where the 4 inches comes in a little bit more, but we got to the point first and third guys wouldn't run because they got thrown out. It would hurt their war. And so they quit going first to third. That can't be what controls the game if I'm worried about my war. We got to get guys running the bases on a ground ball to right field. You're going to get to third base with one out, and the guy has a chance to drive you in. So I just think all this comes in, and front offices are changing their thinking. Players are changing their thinking, and it's going to affect the game in a positive way.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, you know, first and third is now the most interesting situation in baseball. It really is. There's going to be a lot of little league double steals of home. And again, guy breaks, stops, dances. What's the pitcher do? What's the catcher do? It's all a lot of it this spring.
I mean, just think about this, though. We would have never had this conversation in the last 10 years. Not we didn't much. Have. This has changed everything.
Right. Yeah. Hey, look, let's switch gears. Since we were all in spring training, I'd love to talk just a little bit about what we saw. Let's try to do this quick. Some team that you saw this spring that you think will surprise people. Howard, you got a pick?
I think the Baltimore Orioles are going to surprise people. I really love their young talent.
Yeah,
I think they've really come on. I think they will really surprise folks. I think Arizona's going to be better than most people think. They'll be competitive, more competitive. And I just think the Dodgers don't have the depth most people do going the other direction. So those are my three things that I see with clubs.
Doug, what do you think?
Well, I'm gonna take like probably the safest pick of all, the Angels, because they're gonna surprise you no matter what they do.
Yeah.
If they win, it's like, oh my goodness. If they lose, like, how do you lose with Trout and Ohtani? I mean, it's like, and I'm hoping they're gonna ride the wave of like the WBC, because that matchup, you know, it's like, can we just get to the next level? But the game like needs these guys to just like get to the post just to see what they would do. I mean, would Ohtani pitch to himself? I mean, I'm just curious. Like, how do you do this? those guys. I picked the Angels, I think, in one of my many prediction polls to make it this year, just because. I'm like, let's just get the Angels in there.
All right, here's my team. How about the Red Sox? I did not pick them to make the playoffs, but I do think they're going to contend. I think they'll have a winning record. I think Chris Sale comes back and reminds us of what he used to be before he found like 12 crazy ways every season to get hurt.
That must be the last camp you stopped by, huh?
I don't know. I just think there's a scenario. I thought in the WBC, Yoshida looked like everything that they told us he'd be at the plate, Harold. And I know Alex Cora thinks so. I also had this feeling that Justin Turner and Kenley Jansen will help that team and stabilize that team. So I just think they're better than most people think. I don't know.
It's good. It's good.
How about some player who impressed you this spring? It would be a prospect. It could be a young player. It could be a breakout player, whatever. Doug, I'll let you start. What do you think?
Well, in terms of like a breakout, well, the
is there anybody who impressed you that?
I mean, I just my answer to everything is Shohei Ohtani. I mean, because it's like I'm just sitting there and it's any chance I get to talk about this guy because I'm just trying to understand what I saw in the WBC, right? 100 miles an hour by Trout, 100 miles an hour by Trout, 102 miles an hour that, you know, almost took off the catcher's arm. And then a slider that I think hit the batter in the on deck circle and then ricocheted over home plate. And I'm just trying to understand, like, and then he like sprints to first and he hits for power. I'm curious if he like what he can possibly do. Is there another level here? Because I'm not sure there is. So I just want to throw him in there just because.
Doug, tell Harold your name for Ohtani.
Oh, well, adjectives. I just call him, he's doing something otanic. I mean, that's it. You just have to create a whole verb, adjective, everything. He's just otanic.
He's incredible. I mean, just watching him take batting practice. And like you said, he's the fastest guy on the field outside of all the stuff that you said. I mean, he's truly, truly remarkable. Truly amazing. I tell you what, The other guy that was so impressive, and he didn't play much yet, but it's Bobby Witt Jr. Talking to every player on Team USA, and this isn't just the local little league that says this guy's really good. This is like a major league all-star collection of players. You know, we didn't have all the top pitchers on the Team USA, but you had – I would take that position team against anybody. You could throw Harper in when he's healthy and different guys, but – that team of that lineup will stack with any lineup you throw out there. American League All-Star team, National League All-Star team. I'll take that lineup against anybody. When you get Mookie, Goldschmidt, Trout, and all those guys, and every one of them per man, when I'm talking to them in Miami, is like, have you seen Bobby Witt Jr.? Oh, my goodness. Have you seen Bobby Witt Jr.? I mean, he's, what, 21, 22? He'd be a senior in college right now. He was already almost 30-30 last year. If he wasn't already, I'm not sure. But, man, he is off the charts talented. And he's going to be fun to watch this year.
That's a good one. I mean, the Royals finally got Mondesi out of his way, cleared the way for him to play shortstop. That's his comfort zone. Just monster talent. I'm really excited about him too. I was wandering around spring training in Florida. So I had two guys. One was a surprise to me, Matthew Boyd, back in Detroit. I don't know if you guys noticed, had an incredible spring. 21 strikeouts in 13 innings. I saw him one day. He faced 10 hitters and he punched out 7 of them. He's back to his old delivery. The Giants really work wonders with him. Like if I had a fantasy draft coming up, he'd be a great mid late round pick for me. The other one is a young player, Gunnar Henderson from the Orioles. I know this is breaking news,
too, man.
Wow, it's the first time I'd seen that guy play in person, Harold. He didn't even have a big offensive spring, but I mean, wow, like what can he do? He was great with a glove at third one day. He was incredible with a glove at short another day. Power, he's got the wheels. He's got the ability to control at bats. I just think he's going to be so much fun to watch as he turns into a star. All right, I know you got to run, so
I'm good. I'm good. We'll keep going for a little bit.
Okay, you want to keep going? Doug wants to talk about Ohtani. Let's just do a couple of Ohtani predictions. Higher OPS plus as a hitter or ERA plus as a pitcher? For people who don't know what that is, it takes OPS, ERA, compares them to the league average player, and it tells you how much by percent that player is better than the average player. So just so you know, last year, ERA plus one, he was 72% better than league average as a pitcher, only 45% better at the plate. But the year before was Shohei the hitter, was 57% better, and Shohei the pitcher, a mere 41% better. So this seems like a fun category. What do you think, Shohei the pitcher or Shohei the hitter?
Well, it sounds like it's an easy one for me. I'm going to make it sound that way. It's very difficult by my pauses there. But because of the shift rule, his offense is going up. Right. They can't defend him anymore. Like three guys on one side of the field. There's going to be balls that get through now. He's the type of guy with his speed and ability that's going to hit a ground ball that would have been caught by a shift by the shortstop, and it's going to split the center fielder, and it's going to be a triple. That's how hard he hits the ball that were outs before. So I think he because of the shift rule, I'll go with the hitting going higher.
Wow, that's a good one. Doug?
Yeah, I agree with that. I like the hitting side. I think, you know, he had a kind of a slow by Ohtani standards few months last season. I think he's going to be motivated to just try to take that and erase it, you know, and kind of pick up where he left off at the end of the season. But yeah, you add the shift and you add other elements. It's like, he's going for it.
Can I tell you a quick story? So the first time that I go to it was spring training, and I go to Tempe to see Shohei Ohtani. He'd been there one day, and I got there on day two. And I show up and I'm walking in to the complex, and Mike Trout and Justin Upton run to me like it's Christmas. And they're like, "You got to see this guy. You won't believe this guy." And I'm like, what are you talking about? I had no idea, first of all, he was 6'5", like 235. He's a stud, just chiseled out of granite. And here's Mike Trout and Justin Upton, two power hitters, coming to me going, "You won't believe this. He's hitting balls, Harold, on the rocks." And if you ever been to that complex in Tempe, in left center field, there's this rock standard up there. He's going, "He's hitting balls on the rocks." And I'm thinking to myself, I thought he was left-handed hitter. You know, and they're going, "He is left-handed. He, opposite field, he's hitting them on the rocks. I've never seen anybody hit a ball that far in my life." And I'm like, "Come on, you gotta be kidding me." And I watch him take the first round of BP, and Trout's just like, "Told you." It was unbelievable. And he hasn't stopped. The guy's amazing.
I was out there a couple years back for his first side session, his first bullpen session of spring training. They hadn't even been announcing when he was going to throw. And so word got out. Harold, Doug, it was like Tiger going off the 18th fairway at Augusta. This stampede of humanity when they realized Shohei's going to throw. Like 1,000 people go sprinting to the back mounds there just to watch him throw a bullpen. So I'm going to go with Shohei the pitcher. You know, as we saw in that WBC, I think it just gets better and better on the mound. There's no wrong answer here. None. So how about this one? Does he win the MVP? Does he win the Cy Young? Or does he win both? Oh. Doug, you're dying to answer this question. I know you are.
Wow. Well, as I said, I create a whole new dictionary off of Ohtani. So I don't know. Has anybody won both? Like, it's winning both. Like, Verlander won both, but they were like one dude. But I'm trying to think of, like, has anybody won both independently? Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
no, it's
like,
who could do that?
Right. So I think you get the both awards and you fuse them together, and then you just call it the Ohtani Award. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just, why not? Let him. I'm just going to say he's going to win both. Because it's just like, if he has the kind of year he had with the offense and the pitching he had, I mean, I think it's just, and someone just has a little bit lower. The pitching's a little bit down. Hey, give it to Ohtani.
So we'll call it the MVO, something like
MVO,
that.
MVO, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harold, do you got?
I think every year it's his to lose before the season starts. And every player in baseball knows it. Yeah. Aaron Judge hits 62 homers, drives in 137 runs, and hits three 19 or 18 or something like that, and is sweating it out with the MVP. I mean, he's sweating it out. And Ohtani had an off year, okay? He's going to win the MVP. That's given. He has that unless he gets injured. That's the only thing that keeps him from that. The rest, if he hits 40-plus homers, how's he not going to win? He'll win the DH award. He's going to be – I just don't see where he doesn't. And if he gets better like Jason Stan as a pitcher, he's going to win the Cy Young.
So you're going with both? Doug's going with both? I'm going with both. Why not? And then he'll sign with the Dodgers for what, $800 million? Something like that.
You got to pay him for two people.
He'll get paid.
Name him a country. They're just going to have to give him a country, like an entire country.
That's okay.
Crazy. He's getting a lot of money.
That can be your project for next week, Doug. Think of what Ohtani Nation would be called. Okay. All right, let's do one more. Pick who's in the World Series and who wins the World Series.
Ooh.
Harold, we'll start with you.
Wow, I knew you were going to do that. who's in that World Series? I have a hard time not seeing the Astros repeat back at the World Series. They are so good. Winning it, who are they going to play against? I think out of the National League, believe it or not, most people would think I'm nuts. I was picking Mets early, but I think the Phillies are what they did with that bullpen. They're going to get Bryce Harper back like the greatest trade they could ever made. I think the Phillies are the team to beat in the National League. And we're going to get a repeat of last year's World Series.
So Astros, Phillies again. How about that? Doug, what's your pick?
Well, like I said, I learned about predictions that I could just say today, this is my prediction.
Yeah, that's what I do.
So, I threw on my list, I put the Blue Jays and the Braves. I think it, take you back to the 90s or whatever. I'm just like, why not? Blue Jays, Blue Jays, hey, fantastic. Their pitching is solidified. They got Dalton Varsho. I mean, it's an interesting team that's young and athletic and it's got power and they do a lot of great things. So I'm like, everybody's kind of predicted them the last couple of years. So I'm just going to keep doubling, tripling down on them. And then I picked the Braves because, they're one of, you talk about a great young team that just has a lot of bandwidth to learn and make adjustments. Snicker gives them the room to do that. And, Riley was a little bit slow, end of the year, but you put those guys together and you just hit the team from a couple of years ago. So I'm just like, why not? I think there's a lot of great teams certainly going to go for it, even in their own division. But with Diaz going down and the Mets, that hurt. That hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Braves could easily get there. I've got Blue Jays against Padres.
Wow.
And the Blue Jays winning. I saw the Blue Jays a lot this spring. Every time I saw them, I swear they scored 14, 16, 18. They balanced out that lineup. And one of the things that really caught my eye about them is what I was talking about earlier. They have really leaned into using the new rules to rev up their running game. A lot of stolen bases this spring, but also a lot of that dancing to try to disrupt pitchers that I was talking about, trying to make them use up their disengagements. Dalton Varsho, great at that. They haven't won a World Series since Joe Carter's home run landed. It was 30 years ago. I think that might change. I don't know. I never get tired of picking them either. Harold, it's been so cool to have you here in Starkville, man. We loved it. Doug is working on that key to the city. That should be in your inbox here any moment now. Look, come back anytime, and good luck keeping Adnan under control on that 6 o'clock.
All right,
appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners in this show. And Doug, we are somehow undefeated in trivia in spring training. So, don't mess it up this week, all right?
Yeah, yes. Undefeated, I like it. We are, even if we get one wrong, we're always undefeated within an hour, because we're 0-0 after that. You have to clear your mind, clear it, and start again.
Okay, whatever you say. I just know that we had a lot of great questions this week. But our friend and our frequent trivia nemesis, Paul McCord, emailed us a great question. This was, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But since we talked about Ricky Henderson on this show with Harold Reynolds and how many bases he would steal with these new rules, it just felt like the perfect time for a little Ricky trivia, which is what Paul supplies. So, Paul, welcome, and way to go thinking right along with us. How are you?
I'm doing great, and thanks for inviting me on.
We are glad to have you back. If you listen to this show, or you follow Paul on Twitter, which you should at Braves Stats, you know he's a massive Atlanta Braves fan. So, Paul, I think I should ask, how are you feeling about the Braves in the monster NL East?
I'm feeling pretty good about them right now. I think related to the conversation we're having about steals, Ricky Henderson, I think Sean Murphy's going to have a much bigger impact than some people think. They look at offensive numbers and think, wow, 18 homers in Oakland, that's not a whole lot. Whether he hits more than that or not, which I think he will, I think his impact behind the plate is going to be huge for what he can do back there. And everything else remains the same, except we have a healthy Acuna back and things of that nature. So,
well shortstop does not remain the same, but whatever.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Braves will do their thing. I've seen them a lot this spring, and you should know Doug Glanville just picked them to go to the World Series. Yeah, he did.
I did. Today. Tomorrow will be different.
Yeah, but the truth is we have stalled long enough. It is time to put our trivia streak on the line. So, Paul, what's your question?
All right. Well, as I'm sure we all know, because you guys have discussed it many times, stolen bases are expected to, hopefully go up this year, as we've seen in spring training and elsewhere. So that was the inspiration for this question. So Ricky Henderson broke Lou Brock's career stolen base record with number 939 on May 1st, 1991. Fun fact, that was just hours before Nolan Ryan pitched his seventh career no-hitter later that night. Anyway, after that record-breaking 939th steal, Ricky stole 467 more bases to finish his career with a massive 1,406. Mm. 467. Only six players whose MLB debut came after he broke that record would go on to steal as many as 467 in their entire respective careers. Can you name them?
All right. Well, that's a great question. Nolan Ryan's not an answer to the question, though, despite that Nolan Ryan little aside that you threw in there. But Paul, since you're such a loyal listener, you know something important here.
Yep.
You know that when you ask for six answers, that is well above the Glanville trivia line. He does not permit questions with that many answers. So this is where we need to negotiate a more manageable number. So we don't need to come up with all six of these guys. I feel like on our last show, I think we had another question with six answers and we settled on four. So if we get four of them, would that work for you?
I think four works. And I've got faith in you guys. I think you're going to get more than four of these. But I think four is actually, that's a solid settling point there. I can go for that.
Yeah, I think and do we get six guesses? How did we do this?
Yeah, go for six guesses. See if you can get all six, because I want to see if you can do it. Yeah. But if you get four of those, give me your top four, but then throw me two more names.
All right, make six guesses. I like it. All right.
Sorry about that plane.
Oh, yeah. I don't hear it. I don't hear it over here.
Really? Okay. Nope. All right, so we need four out of the six players on at least 467 bases in basically the last 30 years. That's okay. So
yeah, that's about right. Since May of 91.
Right. Okay. So I know one of these because we were talking about Britt Jarolli's Ricky Henderson story, and this guy was in there. So D. Gordon, or D. Strange Gordon, as he is known now, he is definitely one. I think I know two without thinking real hard. Kenny Lofton has to be one of them, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be. And I feel like Juan Pierre has to be one, because all those two guys did was run. So it gives us three. We need one more, right? Doug, you played in this era. You were not one of these. Am I correct?
No, not even close. I had more than 400 strikeouts. if you want to count that.
That's a different question, however. Different. Okay, so we need one more, but we're going to guess three more. All right, let's think this through, Doug. I think Jose Reyes should be one, right? His name came to mind.
I forgot about him.
Okay. Carl Crawford, like, wouldn't he be one? Led the league in stolen bases a bunch of times.
Yep.
I thought about Michael Bourne, Billy Hamilton, all those. I mean, those guys were burners. Luis Castillo used to hit behind Juan Pierre in Miami. Stole a ton of bases. Oh, and one more. When did Marquise Grissom debut? I think he debuted before May 1st, 91, but that's a...
The debuts kind of get me. Yeah, that's...
That's a little supplement. That's why it's good we only need to get four. Anyway, Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, these are... All right, well, one thing I was thinking... Well, I'm gonna throw some, high-level dudes and let me know if I'm in the ballpark. Like a guy like Carlos Beltran, how many bags did he have? Did he have that many? That's too many, right?
He definitely stole at least 300. Did he get to 400? Wow. That's a good name.
Wasn't really sure.
Never led the league in steals, did he? I don't think he ever did.
No. And then what about like Junior or
no.
A-Rod?
No. They didn't run enough later in their career.
Okay.
Alex went 40-40 early.
Yeah, no, he had a lot of bags. Yeah, I had Katsia on here. What about how many bags did Ichiro steal?
Yeah, I thought about him too. He definitely led the league in stolen bases, maybe even his first year, but then he didn't run quite as much either. He's got to be really close, really close.
Okay, and then what about Tony Womack? He was a pretty...
He stole a lot of bases, led the league in steals. I'm going to say he didn't do it quite long enough. That's another really good name. God, we're really getting confused now.
I'll say that I'm just throwing the. All right, so I don't know when these guys debuted. I mean, Biggio debuted before 91, right? Craig Biggio? Or did he?
Again, that's close. It's close.
Chipper had a lot of 30s, but I don't think he...
Nah, there's no way.
Probably didn't get to 400. Jim Edmonds? No, he's 87, right?
Now you're just dropping names to drop.
Jimmy Rollins? J-Roll?
It's a good name. Here's the thing.
460 is a lot of bags. That's like...
460 is a lot. You have to average...
It's 12 years, 40 bags a year.
Exactly. Right? And so... Think about it. You have to really steal bases at a high level for a long time.
Yeah.
Or steal, you have some seasons where you stole 50, 60, 70. So that's, let's not drop names just to drop them. So,
yeah, all
right. I'm confident we have three of them.
Lofton, Pierre, Gordon. So it's Jose Reyes, Carl Crawford.
And who?
Luis Castillo.
I'm going to leave this to you, Doug.
All right. I like Reyes. I do like Reyes and Crawford. I mean, I like Reyes particularly. Yeah. All right. I don't know about Beltran. Marquise Grissom, I just don't know when he debuted.
Let's not take that chance.
Okay. Let's not take a chance. I don't know about Bourne. Gosh, Michael Bourne is a good one. Luis Castillo, man. He ran a lot. Is it enough?
Doug, just make a guess.
You guys are deliberating, I will volunteer that you have at least named the six names somewhere in your discussion.
Talk our way out of them. Okay, I'm naming Gordon, Pierre, and Lofton. Doug has named...
I'm taking your names, Reyes.
Reyes and Crawford. And just guess one name, would you please?
This could be it.
Make a guess.
I'm looking at this.
Do it.
Ichiro Castillo. Doug. Luis Castillo. Man.
We're going to have to go to the Jeopardy theme music here so you don't spend 10 minutes making your guess.
Curtis Good.
Tim, get the Jeopardy theme music ready for
Eric
next
Young.
Week.
Okay. You play it. I'll be ready after Jeopardy. Four. 167. Zach. All right, Luis Castillo, I'll say that.
Okay. All right, Paul. I can't remember back to the beginning of this answer, but I believe we're guessing Gordon, Pierre, Lofton, Crawford. I can't even remember anymore.
Reyes and Castillo.
Reyes. And who'd you just pick, Doug?
Castillo.
Luis Castillo.
Castillo. Okay. Paul, how'd we do?
Good news. You did get 4 out of 6.
Oh, okay.
So I'll let you know that I have the top 18 in front of me, mainly because active leader with 336 is number 18 on the list, and that is D. Strange Gordon.
Oh, okay. So I got two.
He's not even on there?
He's down at number 18. He's got 336, so he's not at the 467 yet.
I must have misread Britt's story.
I think, he's the closest guy who could get there what I think she may have been emphasizing.
So here's your
top six. And the top two came out pretty early. Kenny Lofton at 622. Juan Pierre at 614.
Right. Okay.
Then Jose Reyes at 517.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you said Ichiro, 509.
Good job.
But that wasn't one of your guesses in the end. Correct guess, your fourth one is Carl Crawford at 480.
Ooh,
and then tight. Near the very end, you squeezed in a guess, but didn't settle on him. Jimmy Rollins at 470.
If he listens to this, he's not going to be happy with us for me.
No, I threw his name on him.
But somewhere in there, we got it right, right?
Goodness.
And I really liked that because it emphasized how the stolen base it hasn't been a big part of the game since the 90s, yet Ricky kept stealing at a prolific rate, even in his later stages of his career. Just amazing what he could do.
All right, let's skip the baseball significance. Doug, we just went 4 for 4 this spring in trivia. Now, that's significant. I don't even think we got 3 right the whole season last year, did we?
we were tight. we're going next level, man. Next level. Next level.
Okay, let's go with that. Look, here's the good news. The part of this segment which involves us is history. Now comes the best part. By which I mean the part where we bring in the mayor of Starkville, Mayor Tim McMaster, to play another classic play-by-play clip. It involves this week's answer. Mayor Tim, come on in and play us something magical. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I guess you guys got it right. But if you had only given 4 answers, you wouldn't have gotten...
Well, that I would have said
Gordon.
I would have blamed Britt.
Wrong. But Paul did. Paul said, "Give me 6." So
he did. So we just went off that.
The question asker sets the rules. So you guys got it. But I just wanted to state that this one's a little shady, a little bit shady.
There's nothing shady about it. Nothing. We name all 6 at one point or another, and while we were discussing this for 25 minutes, we did.
Yeah. I know. All right, 4 in a row. That's the greatest win streak of all time in Starkville.
I think so.
There's no question. All right, we're going to go with the top guy on that list, Kenny Lofton. Steals in general don't make for the greatest highlights. So we're actually, technically, this isn't a steal, but we're going to go back to the 1995 American League Championship Series. Kenny Lofton on 2nd, runner on 3rd, Randy Johnson on the mound.
I remember this.
Ooh.
It gets away. Heading home is Amaro. To 3rd is Lofton. They have no play. And now here comes Lofton all the way. And he scores. He never stopped.
Scored from 2nd on a pass ball. Impressive stuff. Although I will say that Dan Wilson did not hustle.
I was there for that game. Remember it well. The part I didn't remember was, what did Bob Costas say? Here comes Amaro? Really?
Yeah.
I forgot all about that part. And you would also be correct. Technically, that was not a steal, but it was a moment where Kenny Lofton just did that thing that Kenny Lofton did. And Paul, this was a fun question. It was a timely question. And thank you so much for joining us again here in Starkville.
Thanks for having me. I'll look forward to coming back someday.
Yeah,
sir. And you can allow us to give 17 answers to the next question too. That'd be fine.
As long as you set the rules. Everybody's out there now. Everybody knows. Set the rules.
Yep. You two can be part of these trivia segments just like Paul. We'll tell you how to do that in just a few minutes.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Sliding, catching, and going into the dugout.
So now it's time to hang out in one of our favorite spots in Starkville, the dugout. That's where Doug Glanville sits and entertains us with his special Glanville-esque baseball storytelling. Hey, Doug, just before I tee you up here, funny Starkville thing happened to me the other day. Okay, I have jury duty coming up, so I had to fill out the jury duty questionnaire. And so one of the categories on the questionnaire is, what town do you live in? So you know how it wants to, like, pre-answer for you? So when I clicked on that box to start to type in where I live, you know what popped into the box? Starkville.
Oh, how did that happen?
I'm not sure, but there's like a little AI creature inside the jury center back in Pennsylvania.
Oh, my goodness.
Which thinks I live in Starkville now, and I guess he's not totally wrong.
Totally wrong. Are we in the USA, though? We could just say, maybe we just say Earth. Starkville, comma, Earth. I don't know.
Also, somebody tweeted at me last week looking for eating tips in Starkville. I had to say wrong Starkville. Sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. I have French toast, though. I make French toast every day, so I'll put that on the menu.
Okay. Now back to our regular programming. Doug, it's the last week of spring training. You know what happens the last week of spring training, right?
Yeah.
Guys.
Oh, yeah.
Cut. But other guys have much cooler stuff happen to them. It's the kind of stuff that happened to Anthony Volpe of the Yankees over the weekend, and it sounded like this.
You know, we talked about at the start of this being a competition, and you killed it. But at the end of the day, you got 20-something games at AAA. There's always room for development. But at the end, I think that development should happen in the big leagues. Congratulations, brother. You earned it.
That was Aaron Boone telling Anthony Volpe, hey, dude, you made the team. You don't have to go to AAA. What a thing. And so, Doug, I'm guessing you can relate to that, right? So tell us a story or stories about making the team or not making the team at the end of the game.
Yeah, it's funny. I sent Booney a text after that because, and I eventually posted it about how it reminded me of Bull Durham, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time. And I played in that league, in the Carolina League. And I remember the manager, who was played then by Trey Wilson, I believe, he was telling Crash Davis or others about how hard it is to send people down. And that's kind of the tone that Boone had, saying this is the toughest thing a manager has to do. The organization has decided to make a change. That was sort of the line. And then you kind of expect from there, you're getting cut or released. And Boone just totally flipped the script and was like, congratulations. Right? And so as Volpe said, like your heart's racing, you're having a heart attack, and especially you're just trying to get your debut, you're trying to get there, you're excited, and you don't know where this is going because it could go the other way, and sometimes that's hard to swallow. There is a reason, by the way, that I know back in the day, I don't know if they still have this, but they're supposed to give you 72 hours of like kind of mental leave to sort of deal with the disappointment when you get demoted. Any demotion is supposed to come with recovery time. Now, a lot of people ignored that, or they just said, I'm going to play the next day. I did actually take 72 hours one time.
Really?
Much to the consternation of Ed Lynch. The
GM. He was the GM of the Cubs at the time.
Of the Cubs, yes. And I did take 72 hours. But that wasn't exactly popular, but I was like, hey, that's the law. That's the rules. So, it takes me back to a lot of moments because just like you said, Jason, I was fortunate to play long enough to get all those variations of outcomes when a manager calls you in the office. And I have a lot of good memories, of course, making the team. And I have a lot of horror shows. I have a lot of surprises, sometimes where you think you were going to make it and didn't. And one year, remember in Chicago, Mike Morgan, the longtime pitcher, saw that I had a great spring and, I got sent down and I just kind of, knew it was coming in some point, but I still was holding out hope. And he pulled me aside and said, hey, man, you've done everything you need to do. You deserve to be here. Now you can play here. Just go do what you need to do down in AAA, positive attitude, and you'll be right back here. And I was like important. I was a guy that I wasn't like necessarily close with, but I think it was a moment where a big leaguer validated that this is where you belong. I think that matters. It's something as simple as, running stretches before the game in a spring training game against the Twins and Chuck Knoblauch coming up to me and actually knowing my name. Like that was a big deal. I was like, oh, what? He knows my name. So, I think that you have these little milestones. Teddy Higuera, that was like my first like at bat against a big league, major league pitcher in a minor league game and in spring training and just kind of knowing, okay, I can do this. So eventually it goes from, wow, I can make the team to like, I should be on the team and you earn the right to be disappointed, right? That whole cycle that you go through. And I know for me, so Morgan, that was one year, but then that moment where they're saying you made the team, there was a year where the following year, which was 97, we had a really good group of young outfielders all vying for opportunity. And eventually they made a trade. I think they traded Ozzie Timmons and, we had Jennings and Brant Brown, all these guys. And we finally came down to once they made this trade and I was the right-handed bat kind of left, I said, I might make this team. And so nothing like them telling you made the team, out of camp. But the other thing that you always pay attention to is not just what happens to you, but you pay attention to how all your other teammates are treated. This is something you learn very quickly because your career is so short that you notice that if they treat someone with respect and they handle it a certain way, that bodes well for what the organization is about. And if you handle it another way, people pay attention because your day is coming. Just like when Willie Wilson was aging in spring training and Tuffy Rhodes was coming in to take his job, ultimately, he kind of picked a fight with him because he was upset knowing his time was limited. And so I was sent out a lot of times. And my final year, 2005 spring training with the Yankees, it wasn't Boone and Cashman, but it was Cashman and Joe Torre in spring training calling me in the office. And this time I got the pink slip because they said, we have any room for you. We want to release you now because at least you have a week to catch on to a team. Because that's the other thing. If they release you a day before spring training ends, where are you going to go? All the rosters are already set. So you kind of need them to give you a little time to hopefully before a team had made that final decision. So they called me in a week early and I was disappointed because I had heard rumors that I was making the team and I wasn't resting on that, but that was supposed to happen. And here I was on the outside looking in. So in your career, if you're fortunate enough, you get to see the whole cycle of making the team, getting cut as a young player, hoping there's a trade or something to make room for you, you see the moment where you're just getting older and you're questioning whether you have anything left in the tank. You have the moments where you're on a three-year contract, a security where you're there and you're not even thinking about it because you're making the team. Feeling all those emotions is what makes you have an appreciation for the game, because every year counts, every moment counts. And it's such a blink and a stare, as I say, the length of your career. And when it's over, you still remember all those moments of how teams treated you. So this spring, this is happening to players all over the world, really, but all over these spring training camps this last couple of days. And I think you're going to see everything from euphoria to downright disappointment and everything in between. But that's what makes the game go round.
Yeah. You know, Doug, I'm so glad that you talked about this. One of my favorite parts of these spring training Starkville shows is listening to the Glanville spring training stories. They're always so good. But this one in particular, like almost all of them, it's a reminder that, you know, while everybody listening to this thing is like busy working on their fantasy drafts or whatever, but real people have incredible stuff happen to them in the spring in their real lives. And, you know, once there was a time when Doug Glanville was one of those real people. You know, I don't know what that makes you now, Doug, but you were definitely a real person back then.
A clone. I could be a clone. yeah. And the Yankees, by the way, when they did release me, I had already shipped my car to Yankee Stadium. I had already shipped my truck. All my stuff was in it. So it's like, come on, dude. So they offered, Joe Torre's like, he said, well, let me work on it. And he makes arrangements that I flew with the team to land at, you know, wherever, LaGuardia. And then I had to go to the stadium to get my car and then drive home. I was like, that's fine. I'm just going to wear it. I'm just going to do it and talk to Jeter and everybody on the bus. So that was tough. But I, you know, I got my car. That was it. I got it back.
that's always a challenge at Yankee Stadium. Yeah, I'm sure I've told you the story about my car getting locked in the parking garage after a postseason game. And the Yankees just been eliminated. So like wasn't like I could just wait till they played again and come back. That was going to be for 5 months. So they told me wait outside the parking garage till the cleanup crew came, which turned out to be 5:30 in the morning.
Oh my goodness! So, yeah, those
they didn't offer to fly me back to get my car. They just did that for you, though.
So. Yeah, they did. They did. Oh my goodness!
Ah, boy, great times at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. One second, we got our helicopter now. Florida, it's either planes, helicopters, or ambulances.
Right.
All right. One second. Okay. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all season long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you would like to read any of the incredible baseball coverage in the Athletic, nobody does it better. So just go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe via our opening day special for just $1 a month for the next 12 months. Doug, I said $1.
Ooh, yeah, well, that's four quarters out there, just in case.
Don't send us any quarters.
Ten dimes.
Yeah. Hey, also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Every show, we pick some fun listener trivia question, and then that lucky listener gets to join us right here and prove once again, that there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong, although we've been a little better than that in spring training by some miracle. So if you would like to submit a question, you can do what Paul McCord did. You can email us at starkville@theathletic.com. There's an E on the end of Starkville, by the way. Or there's an alternative method. It's called Twitter. Doug, are you still on Twitter? Is that true that you're still on Twitter?
Yeah, I got to go deep in, man. I still have my blue check mark, though, for now. Let's see what happens. Yeah. I'm official. I exist. Right, well,
where would people find you and your blue check mark?
Oh yeah. At Doug Glanville, just very forward. UGGLANVILLE. Did I say that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you spell it. You don't have to spell my whole name. I am at Jason ST. That's JaySomST. By the way, please hashtag those questions. Hashtag StarkvilleQS. So Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Harold Reynolds for visiting us. Thanks to Paul McCord for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you next week on Starkville. Starkville.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.